132270-CV, the State of Texas versus Ronald Giles et al.
Good afternoon, Justices, and may it please the Court. My name is Alex Smith, and I represent the State of Texas. The Texas Supreme Court has repeatedly held that billboard advertising revenue from the face of the sign is not a reliable foundation to value real estate interest in a condemnation case, yet the opposite occurred at trial here. This court should reverse the trial court's judgment for three reasons. First, Kemp's appraisal theory was entirely invalid. Second, Kemp's valuation evidence and advertising revenue estimates of its own advertising revenue were misleading and unreliable and provably false. Finally, there was no evidence or insufficient evidence existed to support the jury's verdict. Accordingly, the state asks this court to reverse the trial court's judgment and remand the matter for a new trial.
Mr. Smith, let me ask you a question right off the bat so that I have a good understanding of these proceedings that I'm very unfamiliar with, I'll tell you. The special commissioners that were initially heard this, I realize that, you know, that this is a trial de novo and that their findings are inadmissible. However, I presume they are comprised of people that know this area, know the law, and it seems that they accepted the same theory that was presented to at the trial court here, given the award that they gave. So how do you explain that? I guess we can't really consider that since it's not part of our record, but.
The commissioner's hearing in this case, commissioners are appointed by the court. The requirements to be a commissioner are that you own property in the county in which the hearing is occurring. A special commissioner's hearing is not subject to many of the rules and requirements that are that must apply in the trial court level. All sorts of evidence comes into special commissioner's hearings. When an objection is filed by either party, the award is vacated, and as Justice Contreras stated, it is a de novo proceeding at the trial court level. So while the evidence that came into the special commissioner's hearing in the state's view was just as objectionable as that ultimately came in at trial. And so for that reason, the state filed an objection and proceeded to have the trial that the justices will find in the record. And the reason for that, justices, is the emphasis on advertising revenue from the face of the billboard sign by Kemp Texas, the billboard company. At the special commissioner's hearing, the commissioners heard plenty of it and awarded the award that they did. And at trial, the same thing happened with the jurors. Starting in 2009, the Texas Supreme Court in the Central Expressway case held that Central Expressway's the easement owner in that case, the appraisal evidence that they offered to value their partial interest in the property, the easement, was not a reliable foundation and should have been excluded. In 2015, the Texas Supreme Court again heard held that advertising revenue from the face of a billboard sign was not a reliable foundation and should not have come into the jury to value a billboard structure. And most recently, a Court of Appeals opinion in the Gunnarsson case, and ultimately the Texas Supreme Court denied petitions of that appeal, held that advertising revenue was not a reliable foundation for Ms. Gunnarsson's appraisal evidence of her integrated ownership theory of the property that she owned subject to condemnation. These are all cases that involved TxDOT, my client, and billboard interest owners in these condemnation proceedings. So, and what the court should understand about these all taken together is that it's not the property interest that matters, whether it's an easement or the billboard structure itself, or all property interests under this integrated ownership theory in Gunnarsson. It is the foundation of the evidence that must be analyzed and looked at to determine reliability. Here, advertising revenue is not. Kemp valued a partial interest in property, its leasehold interest only, based on advertising revenue. This is inadmissible business income, and it is irrelevant to ascertaining the value of the land. That is, the area, the property that the state acquires in a condemnation case.
What would you say would be a justifiable value for the sign interest? How would you value it if you were valuing it right now?
What would be appropriate to do is to look at comparable market rents paid to the unified fee holders in a relevant market area, which is what Mr. Cervenka did in this case. He was the state's project appraiser and ultimately called at trial by the Gileses, the landowners of the property. His ultimate value was $61,207. And same thing for Mr. Welch. You would value all property interests subject to condemnation based on a verifiable amount of rent actually paid. That didn't happen here in this case, and Kemp's appraisal theory doesn't adhere to that principle. The amount of money that to which Kemp's appraiser applied a capitalization rate, that is its bonus value, is by definition advertising revenue never paid to the unified fee owner. So this is a distinction with a major difference. And before and after condemnation, these dollars to which Mr. Baer, in his report and at trial, applied a capitalization rate of 6% are the same inadmissible business income dollars before condemnation and after condemnation. And furthermore, to value a property interest separately from the land is inappropriate under the cases I have just described, specifically Central Expressway and Clear Channel, and all the way dating back to a Texas Supreme Court holding in 1966 with Urban Renewal Agency versus Trammell. Now, the purpose of that rule is to value all property interests subject to condemnation, subject to that are involved in the area of land that the state's acquiring or any condemning authority. And Central Expressway says that the sum of the parts cannot exceed the whole. So when a piece of property, and in this case, the property area was about a third of an acre on US 59 in Wharton County, it was subject to a lease. Now, the point here and the way to properly appraise that would be as if it belonged to one owner. That's what Mr. Cervenka did, and that's what Mr. Welch did. Mr. Baer did not, and Kemp's appraisal theory ignores that principle, that is, the unified fee rule entirely. They valued a partial interest in property, a leasehold interest only, and effectively a contract, their lease, separately from the land, based on inadmissible business income. Now, what the Texas Supreme Court has held is that the sum of the parts cannot exceed the whole, and the only competent evidence admitted at trial of a whole property valuation and a part acquired valuation, all property interests, was that offered by Mr. Cervenka and Mr. Welch. Now,
Mr. Welch, so they valued the leasehold interest based on what was actually paid to the property owner to put the sign on the property, right? Is that what? So he was paid something like $200 a month. I don't remember the exact numbers, but that's how they valued it.
At the time of condemnation, I believe the contract rent in place was $2,760.
Annually.
Annually.
Yes.
Yes, Justice. And Mr. Cervenka and Mr. Welch both had comparable market rent estimates approximating $3,000 a year based on other billboard sign sites in a relevant market area. And here, the determinant of what a relevant market area would be primarily traffic counts and population and just the general character of the property condemned. So they looked around at, because no two properties are the same, you must identify comparable properties to reach your estimation of any given property that you're appraising. Now, to the point that the sum of the parts may not exceed the whole, Justices, Kemp's appraisal theory, that offered by Mr. Baer at trial, Mr. Metoyer at the special commissioner's hearing, and then confirmed by Mr. Metoyer at trial when he testified, well, I agree with Mr. Baer's opinion and so forth, the valuation of the leasehold interest was $179,000. that is a partial interest in property. And the only evidence of the whole property valuation of the part acquired was $61,207 and approximately $48,000 by Mr. Welch. So plainly, $179,000 cannot be apportioned from that amount. It is larger by by a factor of any competent evidence of the whole property valued.
But in this case, there was a question submitted that did apportion it between the landowner and Temp, correct?
That was the second question of the jury charge.
Right.
Now, I'm sorry, I didn't want to.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
So, and that question was, so the jury questions in our view were correct. They were what the state at charge conference and the questions that we asked the trial court to instruct the jury on. But the opinion in the Texas Supreme Court in Urban Renewal in the Trammell case held that evidence of separate valuations submitted to the jury throughout the trial and then added together essentially to reach the first question, to answer the first question first, and then apportion it was misleading and unreliable. And that's very much what happened here, a sum of the parts valuation such that the jury heard all this evidence of different property interests, added them together, reached a verdict of $159,033, and then apportioned it. So again, this is working backwards through appraisal methodology. That is to say, identify what the whole property is worth first and then apportion. Any discussion about the lessor's interest, or I'm sorry, the lessee's interest, the billboard company's interest, and amount of compensation owed must be derivative of a whole property valuation. So turning to the character of the valuation evidence itself, justices, there was no evidence that Chem ever generated $46,800 per year from Board 1710. There was no evidence that Chem generated $3,900 per month from Board 1710. After a motion to compel pretrial, Chem produced its actual advertising revenue statements, which was State's Exhibit 15 at trial, in Appendix C of the brief, and that is the statement of actual advertising revenue from this billboard and Board 1365 and billboards in Wharton and all surrounding and five surrounding counties. In no year prior to condemnation did Chem ever generate $46,800 a year. And so
so this below market theory that, as you put it, is that something that's not common in the industry to use? I'm assuming not.
Well, it's unusual, and this trial was unusual for that reason. And what's clear and what the cases, I believe, support here is that, you know, valuing a leasehold interest based on business income is not an appropriate way to reflect what the land is actually worth. Now, the evidence admitted at trial was such that the opinion said, well, market rent is 30% of ad revenue. And then from that, taking 30% of an overestimation, which characterized as a misrepresentation, frankly, of Chem's own actual advertising revenue, because there's no evidence that it earned that. Leading up to condemnation, Chem earned $16,146 in annual advertising revenue. The year before that, just over $13,000 a year. So multiplying contract list rates by a run rate out to weeks or years is misleading. Billboard owners do not pay a landowner any percentage of advertising revenue that was never earned. No one can pay anyone a dollar or a percentage of a dollar that does not exist. And so here, the bonus value that, again, to which Chem's experts applied a capitalization rate was very much an artifice in that advertising revenue only existed by a function of first offering the opinion that market rent was 30% of ad revenue and then $14,000 per year. You can't get to an opinion that market rent is $14,040 per year without first offering the opinion that market rent is a percentage of revenue. And so that is misleading. And ultimately, there was no evidence to support it. Justices, I see that my time is now complete.
You're more observant than I am. I was just entrenched in the argument. Thank you. Yes, you'll have your remaining 5 minutes for rebuttal. You may proceed, Mr.
Your Honor, Mike Falick.
Mr. Falick, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Mike Falick. I represent KEM Texas in this appeal and represented KEM Texas at the trial of this case. And by way of very brief background, I wanted to lay what this case is actually about. You've kind of dove into the, with Mr. Smith, into the rather nuanced area of law that we're talking about. But this is not a nuanced area of law. Indeed, this area of law, condemnation law in Texas, goes back to Article 1, Section 17 of the Texas Constitution. And I could do what I did in every opening argument that I've ever tried a case and talk about the Magna Carta at this point. I will refrain from doing so. But this is not a new area of law. What the state has sought to do here is conflate a really specific area of appraisal methodology with what is the generally accepted way that all businesses determine how much they're going to pay if they're renting property. That is, I am willing to pay a percentage of my gross revenue for my leased office space. It's no different for my law firm than it is for my billboard clients than it would be for a store in a shopping center. You can't pay 120% of what you make in ground rent, and that's what we have here. What we have is a situation where my client leased a space on Mr. Giles' property for the placement of a 14x48 steel monopole billboard. Nothing unique about that. If you drive on Highway 59, you'll see them. You might even see one of my clients.
We may have had campaign signs at one time or another on
that. And my clients gratefully appreciate that business.
For the record, I'm not sure we even did.
Nor am I, Your Honor. I don't know. That said, the sign at issue here was just one of those signs along US 59, now Interstate 69, that was in the way of the state's widening project. The lease between my client and Mr. Giles only allowed us to place a billboard on the property. And once the widening happened, we couldn't move the sign anywhere else on Mr. Giles' property because under Texas regulations, the sign site was no longer conforming. There were no longer businesses proximately located, so the sign came down and the lease was rendered valueless. That's what this case is about. That's what it's been about. That's what it will always be about. The challenge in determining the value of the take here is that for a billboard company, it comprises two components. The structure, that is the steel, we in the state settled on that before the special commissioner's hearing. So that was not part of this case. What's left then as it relates to KEM is its lease. That is, what's it going to cost KEM to replace the lease that it had on this property? The lease was not new. It wasn't signed in 2019. It wasn't signed in 2017. It was 2010. And the market changed. That was our evidence. The problem with billboard lease sites is it's not like a condemnation of an office building where there are 20 other similar office buildings that are all being condemned at the same time. Or houses, when you go to buy a house, your realtor probably gives you a comp. This is what the houses in the area are selling for. Mm-hmm. Billboard leases aren't as easy to do. My clients tend to be very proprietary with their information. They don't share the information between them, between each other. And so when you get to a condemnation case, it's what's the best way to determine the then existing value on the date of taking, because that's the salient question in a condemnation case, is what's the value on the date of take?
When you say date of taking, I noticed, like, you know, For instance, there was evidence that on the date of taking, I think there was two leases on that, on both sides of that billboard, right? They were in place on that day of the taking. And then we have another look at an annualized amount of income. Does the case law say it should be averaged what that income is on the very day, or is it an annual estimation? How do you make those differentiations?
The case authority on this is more general condemnation as opposed to specifically this particular case. Generally, the law in condemnation is that the condemning authority, the government, has to pay fair market value on the date of the taking. So the question is, what's the fair market value on April 3rd, 2019, the date that the state put the money in the court registry? That's the issue for this case.
And on that date, both sides of the billboard were, in fact, leased out at that time?
At that point, the sign had already been taken down. So we have to back up to the last day that we had advertising on the sign. And on that day, you're correct, Your Honor, that on one face on the billboard, there was an advertiser paying a monthly rate of $1,300, and on the other side, they were paying $2,600. That's the $3,900. That evidence was introduced. The actual ad contracts were introduced, and Mr. Smith made the very arguments today to the jury in that case, to the judge before that, in repeated motions to try to eliminate that evidence. It's important for the court that we didn't win everything we asked for in this case. We presented a strong case, I believe, that the value of the property taken from my client based on that advertising revenue was $179,000. We got an award of $73,000.
But it wasn't on that actual advertising revenue. No. It was on what you...
And that's the important point that I would like to make sure that isn't lost in this. So my law firm has a leased space in an office building in Houston. I don't know what the percentage is that we're currently paying. It's higher than I'd like it to be. But the percentage of our annualized income that goes to rent is a number. It's just math. It's gross revenue or net revenue divided by cost of lease. That's what we did here because there's no comp. There's no lease executed in 2019 for which my client had access and to which it then could apply to the jury to say, well, there are three other leases in Wharton County, Texas on Highway 59 that were all signed this year. And so our best estimate presented by virtue of Mr. Matoyer, who's literally grew up in the business. His family has been in the ad business forever. He swept floors. He testified that he once was making $2.50 an hour sweeping floors. This man has been in the industry his whole life and has leased sites and said that when I go out to lease a site, I anticipate paying about 30% of the income the sign will generate. That is very different from what the Clear Channel case that the state relies on. The Clear Channel case dealt with what's the value of the structure and utilizing ad revenue to determine the value of the structure. What we're talking about in this case is what's the value that the landowner would expect. What's the dirt value? What's the leasehold value? And the leasehold value we submitted to the jury, we submit to this court, is easily based on what an actual billboard company would actually do in the real market, which is what the idea of condemnation is. It's what's the fair market value for the property being taken. The state would have the court find that absent a direct comp, my client doesn't get a recovery. And that is certainly not what the Fifth Amendment says. It's not what the Texas Constitution says. It's not what over 100 years of case law says.
Well, how would you differentiate the Clear Channel case?
Clear Channel dealt with business valuation for the structure. That is, what's the structure? In that case, in Clear Channel, the state and Clear Channel settled on the dirt and left to be determined the value of the structure. And the structure value was, the evidence at the trial was based on income. It was a multiplier. Indeed. That's actually how it works in the real world. When a company goes to buy a billboard, they base it on an income multiplier, just like you would if you were buying any income-producing property. The Texas Supreme Court disagreed with that theory and said that instead, you can't do that on valuation of the structure. But we're not talking about that here. We are talking about what amount of money would not be paid to my client. What would be paid to Mr. Giles? What's the landowner's value? It's important to my client because my client has to go replace that lease. The lease has been taken. And so for it to go replace this valuable lease, it is going to have to pay somebody more than what it paid in 2010. The jury agreed with about 41% of our valuation, just the math on what they agreed to. I want to make sure I hit the two legal theories that the state is arguing. The state is arguing that the unified fee rule prevents us from recovery. Under the unified fee rule, the case authority says that that is an allocation theory, not a valuation theory. Why is that important? It's important here because the state would require property owners to present evidence of property interests they don't own. And as the court knows, Texas forever has allowed the property owner to testify about its opinion of the value of its own property. So here, let's take a different scenario where my client, and because I've got these all over the state, where a client has a billboard in front of a mall or a strip center, and the state's going to come in and it damages all of the property. Would my client, billboard owner, have to value its interest, the interest of each tenant, the interest of the landowner, put it in front of an office building? It is not a tenable position for the cost of the appraisal that we're talking about. And that's not what the unified fee rule says. What it says is that when you're presenting various component parts, the totality of the award can't exceed the component parts. Mr. Smith's argument is the state presented evidence that the total value was $61,000, and so we can't exceed that. That is not how it works. We don't have to fit within the state's estimated value. And indeed, what happened here is we presented evidence of what the billboard sign site leasehold was worth. Mr. Giles presented evidence of what his raw land was worth. And the jury had all of that evidence, and they did not award my client everything we asked for by any stretch. They had all the evidence they needed. They had a variety of different theories. They had three different appraisers. They had ad contracts. They had a lot of evidence, and you've got it all. And the jury did what juries do. They made a determination within all that evidence based on what they saw. The second thing that the state has argued is that our evidence was not proper. That is, we can't bring the evidence that we brought. And there's no case authority to support that a fee or tenant owner cannot present the very evidence that we presented. It is not hypothetical evidence. It was based on the actual advertising contracts. The state had every opportunity to cross-examine. They did. Effectively, apparently, because the jury, again, didn't agree with 100% of what we sought. But clearly, the evidence was that the marketplace from 2010 to 2019 had changed. The state's appraiser presented his comps. They were distant. Mr. Baer presented his comparables, not as comparables, as general market. This is what the market is. His comps, which are highlighted in both briefs, talked about this is what a billboard owner can expect to pay for a similar site, 30%. And interestingly, and not to be lost here, is that the state's appraiser, Mr. Welch, said the very same thing. He said in his report that because billboard companies operate the way they do and the information is scant and hard to find, that a billboard company would expect to pay 10 to 30% of revenue for a sign site. We had different percentages. Mr. Bear said 10 to, or said 30 to 35%. Mr. Metoyer said 30. Mr. Welch said 10 to 30. The jury obviously landed somewhere in there. I don't know how they did their math. They didn't share their work with us. But the bottom line is that there's nothing unusual about this case. This is a simple case, a simple condemnation case, where the parties had the difficult task of determining what's a comparable, what is the fair market value on the date taken. And we presented the evidence in the best way we could of this is what the marketplace bears based on the experience of Mr. Metoyer and, frankly, the experience of the state's appraiser, who also, in his experience, knew that this is common in the industry. So for all those reasons, Your Honors, we would ask the court to affirm the trial court's judgment and conclude this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Hill?
Yes, ma'am.
You may proceed.
Judge, may it please the court. Justices, may it please the court. My name is J. Marcus Hill, and I have the pleasure of representing Ronald and Tamara Giles. Who are they? This is a very simple case, but it's one that touched my heart, and I'm going to tell you why. Ronald is a now-retired Dallas police officer, African-American, and he and his wife inherited the property from his dad. And this particular piece of property was tried in a courtroom that the famous movie To Kill a Mockingbird was designed after. You can call Judge Clapp up in Wharton, and he'll tell you the story. And as many times as I've watched that movie, I remember looking at it. I remember looking over at the other side, our side. I was absolutely touched, and I am today, because I believe that justice to be laid down today, we need to know who the players are and what the play is about. And there's one more party in the play. I have the pleasure of having Ms. Kayla Burwald, who's my associate attorney. If you'll stand up, please. She is a two-year lawyer. Thank you. She was a two-year lawyer at the time. I said, Kayla, this is a good one. This is one you'll always remember. And her parents live about 20 miles from there, and her father's a retired police officer. I'm turning a little red right now. I can feel it. And I said, this is one that you want to try. And she tried it, and I sat with her, and we tried it together. She let me take a witness or two, but she's the attorney in charge. And we won the case. We absolutely won it. And why did we win it? 3:30. Eminent domain, we look at cost approach, income approach, or sales comparison. There are no sales comparisons to speak of on what this man's talking about. But as far as our value of the property goes, the landowner's value of the property goes, we accepted the charge. There is a charge, and Mr. Alex Smith mentioned it earlier. They like the charge, and the charge is spot on. It gives you a grand number, and then it breaks it down. There is no evidence in this record, Judge, that the jurors, Juror A said, I think it's worth $50,000, and Juror B said, I think it's worth $70,000, and let's add it up to $120,000. Rather, the charge is the charge, and it shows 150, and I double-checked the math last night to make sure it was correct. But the charge is that it's 150, and then you break it down. And that charge is even found in the first tab in my book happens to be the appellant state of Texas, and they have the charge attached. And it starts out at $159,033, and then it's broken down to $85,667 for the Giles family, and $73,366. One thing I know about eminent domain, this May 8th, I've been married 39 years, but this May 26th, I've been a lawyer 42 years. 42 years. And one thing I do know is that if you've got a piece of real estate, as much of this as I've done, and you have a number that comes out from the jury between the two they were given, then you're home free. And I would address the court's attention. It's in the brief by, all we did was adopt theirs, and it's in the brief by the appellee, Kim Billboard, and it's on page 58, where it says at the top of the page, Mr. Bear, in turn, testified without objection, Justice, that he considered capitalization rates in the 4 to 6% range, on page 58, stating with that first paragraph. Adopting a capitalization rate of 6% for use in his income. But the jury was told they could have 4 to 6%. And if you look at sentence 2 on page 58 of the appellee's brief, it says, Mr. Welch, that was the government's expert, estimated net operating income is capitalized by 4%. Had he done that, then the value of the signed ground lease would increase by $40,000 and give him $73,000. When the difference goes to us, the landowner, we had got $89,220. So there's testimony that it can be from 4 to 6 and it would have given us $89,220. And what did we get? $85,667. And there's testimony from a state certified real estate appraiser that the signed people could have gotten as much as $73,500 and they got $73,366. So however that good and fair jury, and it was something else because it was there near the end of COVID and Judge Clapp was so smart, he embedded in the questionnaire that he wrote, have you had your COVID test? And 50 people were gone. And how are you, have you had it? So Judge Clapp took care of it. But the jury that was there came out with these numbers. It matches what the testimony was. And we ask you to affirm this opinion. And I'm honored to be here also in front of y'all because this is the first time that I've had the pleasure in 42 years to argue here. And I thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Justices. Yes, ma'am. And I'll let my flush go down a little bit now. I don't think I get any more rebuttals.
Okay. We'll wrap it up then with Mr. Smith with your rebuttal.
Thank you, Justices. I'll briefly just reiterate what Mr. Hill said, and that I'm also honored to be here and to be able to articulate these arguments on this issue, and it is important to the state to get this out here. So I want to address and clear up any concern or assertion that that Mr. Welch, the state's trial appraiser, who rendered a compensation estimate of about $48,000, or Mr. Cervenka, who again was the state's appraiser at the project level and then called to trial by Mr. Giles, did not value the lease interest. I want to clear up and confirm that they very much did. They valued all property interests in the part acquired by the state. That is all property interests subject to condemnation, about a third of an acre frontage road on US 59, a part of which was subject to a lease. The comparable market rent estimate that they offered was based on comparable estimations of comparable properties, that is billboards paying what they were paying, approximately $3,000 a year. So there was any assertion or argument that, oh, well, Mr. Cervenka only offered a value of the land, Mr. Welch didn't value the lease at all, that is not an accurate description of how this appraisal methodology works in a condemnation case. They valued all interests.
Mr. Smith, can you tell us about, I remember reading the briefing about a running objection to the expert reports because the state from the beginning obviously felt this was the incorrect methodology. When did you first object on the record? I don't have that in front of me.
In January of 20...
So way before the trial.
We filed motions to exclude pretrial, had rulings on them. We had running objections to the testimony coming into trial. Again, any assertion, let me clear up, that the state did not object to anything. It does not accurately reflect the pretrial work or the arguments presented in this brief. The state objects to every aspect of all valuation testimony that was admitted by Mr. Baer and Mr. Metoyer.
Preservation issue, I guess, is the question you're getting at. Yeah.
So, again, the valuation testimony offered by Chem, specifically its advertising revenue, was false, Justices. The actual advertising contracts that were presented to the jury to represent that Chem was generating $46,800 per year or $3,900 per year at the date of take, the date of value, these words are used interchangeably, which is April 3rd, 2019, are the exact same advertising contracts in place that support the actual advertising revenue figures underneath or laid out in the summary statement that Chem produced after a motion to compel. A trial in a condemnation case should not be a guessing game about a billboard company's advertising revenue when we know from Central Expressway, from Clear Channel, and from Gunnarsson And the entire progeny that those cases come from, distinguishing the difference between business value and land value, that sort of evidence should not come in the first place.
But Mr. Falk argued that we should consider, again, what will it cost to replace? I mean, to me, that it just seems to be common sense that that would make sense under, you know, fair market value approach. Why is that not applicable here?
Cost to cure applications are used when they're required in, if there is something that needs to, when applicable. That's not really what's going on here. To the extent it's described that way, I believe it's more of a description of where Chem can do business next. I think Chem was paid for the cost of their structure, just shy of $95,000 prior to the special commissioner's hearing, and based on that, received what's called an impacted sign credit, which allows a billboard company to relocate their billboards to other locations if they find one under relaxed spacing requirements set out by TxDOT. So, you know, a cost to cure wouldn't really apply necessarily in this circumstance, in that, again, the task would be to value the one-third acre based on all property interests as if it belonged to one person. And that's what Mr. Cervenka did. That's what Mr. Welch did. $179,000, their valuation evidence cannot be apportioned from a lesser amount. Your Honors, my time is up. Respectfully request that this court reverse and remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting case. It will be under submission.